Today on Doomed! Did you hear about the big anti-war rally that went down in DC this past weekend? Well, if you were following what was going on, you might have seen this event with a bunch of Russian flags, and a bunch of Russian flags, because this Rage Against the War Machine rally wasn't so much an anti-war rally as it was an anti-Ukraine, pro-Russia event. And it was really bizarre to see the strange bedfellows that came together to do this whole thing. And joining me today on this episode of Doomed to discuss all of this, let me pull us up on the screen first so you can actually see us if you're watching the live stream while I introduce us, is Dylan Burns and Ogle, a.k.a. The Wasting Times on Twitter. Dylan, Ogle, thank you so much for joining me today.
Happy to be here.
Thanks so much for having me.
Now, I wanted to do an episode on this event because, listen, when I first found out this thing was happening and I saw the lineup, it's a very weird lineup. And I think it's purposely so to be confusing to the very people who end up defending the people who showed up to speak at this rally. And we can obviously get into those people shortly. But, you know, I saw who's there. I saw how this event went. I saw the crowd and what they were holding up and what they were chanting and cheering for. And Dylan, I know you were there and you interviewed some people and you got the first person experience of exactly who showed up. And, you know, I was thinking of who to have on this show, and Dylan, for the very reason I just mentioned, and also because you have been absolutely great on cover. I mean, you went to Ukraine, absolutely doing great on the ground reporting to cover the Russian invasion and war in Ukraine. And Ogle, I know you have been for a very long time, doing great work online covering these very people who really spoke and, you know, really put together this event, this sort of contrarian faux left movement that, and again, we'll get into the people involved. So I'm so glad to have you both here. And now let's start with Dylan, because you were there. How did you first find out about this thing?
So I first found about the, so I live in the DC area. I was born and raised in the DMV. So political rallies, political events, like, that's nothing new. If you live in the DMV, kind of like you're used to like big events in your area. I would go to DC with my buddies and we'd go to a food truck. We'd just hang out and there'd be some rally about something that most of the time we wouldn't care about. It'd be like, oh, we're here on the shrimping of fish. We're out here to do shrimping regulation. It's like, okay, well, I'm not that invested in shrimping regulation. And that's how most locals engage with this. But this is an issue that I care tremendously about. And so when I heard about it online and I saw the lineup, the first time I had heard about it was because of the controversy surrounding its scheduled speakers and how a lot of libertarians, I have participated in some libertarian events like LibertyCon. I go there as a speaker to talk about Ukraine, and also because I just like to talk to people I disagree with. And a lot of people who are part of like the classical liberal caucus of the Libertarian Party, or maybe more moderate wings of the Libertarian Party, not part of, say, the Mises caucus, they have reacted to this event very poorly due to the guests that were scheduled there and due to the fact that there are pro-Ukraine libertarians. They do exist. And a lot of the controversy surrounded the fact that a lot of these guests are just straight pro-war. Jackson Hinkle was booked for the event. He has said that he'll vote for whoever gives all of Ukraine over to the Russians. He has been supportive of the invasion ever since it happened. Before, he said it wasn't happening. But then when it did happen, he said, never mind, it is happening, and I'm in favor of it, right? And so he's been in favor for the last year, supporting every single move that the Russians have done. He's not the only one. Scott Ritter was also scheduled for the event. Now, the difference between him and Scott Ritter is not only has Scott Ritter made more predictions that have always ended up to be not true. Like, he says multiple times during the war, like, in a few weeks, Ukraine will collapse, right? It's just like, you know how QAnon used to make all these predictions and they would make, like, by this day, this happens, and then it wouldn't, and so eventually he stopped doing it because they kept making themselves look like a clown. Same thing happened with Scott Ritter in this war constantly. But he has even gotten a little bit more vitriolic than Jackson Hinkle at times, saying things like, Ukraine is a rabid dog that needs to be put down by the Putin regime. So it's like really like genocidal-ish language. Like if I was to say that about like if you were to hear somebody say Israel is a rabid dog that needs to be put like that's starting to you're making like genocidal
Dylan, to be fair, what you're describing to me sounds a lot like the slogans of a true blue anti-war movement.
Absolutely. And like I guess was the most brilliant PR move on their side, I think none of them must have Googled who Scott Ritter is, because I'm familiar with Scott Ritter. And the thing is about Scott Ritter is he's a pedophile. He is a kiddie diddler, and he hasn't been convicted on kiddie diddling once. He's been convicted on kiddie diddling twice and has served time in prison for it. And even though he's a former UN weapons inspector, he would rather be inspecting children's private parts because he's a fucking freak. And apparently the people who are organizing the event either didn't look into his past and just like Google his name and find this information out, or they did know and they didn't care, thinking maybe everybody would just ignore it. Obviously that didn't happen. And having your event associated with the word pedophile over and over and over is probably not helpful, especially when your crowd is going to be made up of a lot of people who are the same people talking about the deep state pedophilic cabal. You can't really be making that argument if you're like, I hate the deep state pedophiles. Anyway, next is Scott Ritter, the pedophile. Like it's just not going to come off well. Right. And so he was booted a week before the event. He was very angry about it. He's, you know, he made the argument and, you know, there's skeletons in everyone's closet, which, I mean, I don't have any skeletons like that in my closet, right? Like, most people's skeletons in their closet is like, oh, that was the one night I got really drunk and I did this embarrassing thing. Not, you know, I went out and tried to do one of the most heinous crimes you could possibly imagine. And so my perception of their main problem with the event is they decided their argument against all of this is like, look, we want to have the biggest, widest tent possible. But when you have no regulation on who you're going to give a microphone to, you're going to attract some bad actors. And I did meet bad actors at the event who were attracted by this. Now, I'm going to be for real with you guys. I think the majority of the people there were not in favor of the invasion. They were a sizable portion of the crowd. I could tell that because many of the pictures you've probably seen of the Russian flags were taken by me, including not only the normal Russian flag, but the Russian flag with the coat of arms and the Imperial Russian flag, which is one from the 19th century that is usually only used by the Russian far right, the Sparta Battalion, which has been accused of a lot of war crimes and stuff like that. But I also met Matthew Heinbach, who was there. Matthew Heinbach, being the notorious white nationalist who helped organize Charlottesville, was the founder of the White Students Union, which Vice did a documentary about, which I recommend highly. I think it's pretty good. And also the former communication directors for the American Nazi Party. He was in the crowd. And he was there with people who have ties to the organization called Atomwaffen, which I don't know if you're familiar with, is not a fantastic organization. And I highly doubt they didn't know he was there, because I knew he was there. And everybody else seemed to know he was there. I kept bringing it up. And he was allowed to stay there, it seems like. But you're going to attract those types of people when you have those types of repulsive speakers. And that's why there were a lot of pro-Russian people at the event. And when locals saw the event, and this is always a great litmus test for me, is how locals who aren't associated with the event see the event, right? To see if it's communicating well to like the moderate middle class type people you need to in order for your political movement to be successful. Because they didn't have any politicians who actually elected at this event. They're all either has-beens like Ron Paul. It was sad to watch him speak, man. I don't know if you watched him speak, but it was fucking sad. It was completely incomprehensible what he was saying. It was just like they got to put his name on it. That's what it felt like. Right. But the locals, I heard one local actually just say out loud while passing by, is this a pro-Russia rally? Because they heard somebody say Ukraine's a Nazi state and saw all the Russian flags, and they just thought it was a pro-Russia protest. They did, and they just kept going. And so I think they really fucked themselves by having this tent be so big that they included everyone. And you can't have an anti-war event when you have people who are pro the war starting in the first place and pro invasion.
Right, right. Olga, let's go to you. You did a great rundown of basically, and we'll come back to Dylan, obviously, to talk more about his point of view from there on the ground. But Ogle, you did this great breakdown, basically, of pretty much all the speakers of the event and their background. So can you tell me, who were some of the standouts who, and again, we're now talking about not attendees, not people who showed up because they saw this event happening while they were just walking through DC or whatever. These are the people who were booked by the, well, who were the, do we, you know who the, Olga, I'm assuming you know who the organizers were. Who organized this thing? And then who were some of the main speakers?
So the organizers were the People's Party and the Libertarian Party. And I don't know much about libertarians. I focus more on the ostensible dum-dum left. And so the People Party is run by this guy, Nick Brana, who, you know, strange bedfellows, like Scott Ritter. Not as bad as Scott Ritter, but he has allegations about sexual impropriety and abuse of his power as the head of the People's Party. And he was kind of emceeing the event.
Isn't there, I might be confusing him with, isn't there another guy who runs some like faux lefty group that's super pro-Russia? Caleb something?
Yeah, Caleb Maupin.
And yeah, he also has some sort of sexual weird deviancy.
Yeah, the spanky tanky. He forced like spanking conversations on his comrades, right?
So I mean, I guess we can just sort of, it seems like these guys who are not talking about Ritter, because that's a whole different thing. But at least when it comes to the People's Party and then Caleb's group, I mean, it seems like you got two. Were they part of this Caleb's group? Did they have anything to do with this thing?
Yes, they were.
Okay,
Caleb's group was a sponsor of this. They contributed some money and they got their logo on the website. And then they had an after party
Where Scott Ritter still went to. So yeah. He was still going to events. Jesus there. Christ.
But when it comes to those two guys, because again, the allegations against Ritter are a whole nother level. But
not allegations. He's been convicted. He was in prison for it. We know he did it. Everyone knows he did it. We can read the logs online where he's sending his penis to what is a minor, which was actually an FBI agent. Like the logs are publicly available. You can read them right now. The title of the article where you can read those logs is Scott Ritter's Other War. But amazing title for an article, by the way.
And to be clear, Brana and Maupin, I don't think they have any legal conviction or anything like that.
Right. It's just allegations and accusations from people within the organizations that they... Well, what I was going to say was interesting how you have these individuals who put together these sort of events and have these hardcore followings, and it seems like the both of them have used their power within their own groups to, of course, then allegedly do these things and take advantage of their followers. So the People's Party and Libertarian Movement organized this thing. I saw it was headlined by, and correct me or add anyone who I leave out or correct me if I'm wrong. So you mentioned Ron Paul. Also I heard Tulsi Gabbard was there. I think she saw her even. Yeah. Yep. In the videos, Jimmy Dore, yep. Which I mean, he's over.
It was bad, man. His speech was weird. It was like, so I'm a big, like, my type of comedy is very dry. I like Norm Macdonald type comedy. When he died, like, I was, like, literally crying. Like, that's the type of comedy I like. Jimmy's comedy never appealed to me, but it also wasn't hitting there. And it probably wasn't helped by the fact that there was counter-protesters, and one of them kept yelling, "No wonder you don't get booked anymore. No wonder you don't do comedy anymore." And it was really brutal, man. Like, people were doing it was the type of comedy where people were clapping, not laughing, which is the worst type of comedy.
Right. Well, yeah, this is the crowd that would do that, right? On top of that. Who else? I saw, what's his name? Kucinich was there.
Yep, Kucinich was there. Garland Nixon was there, too.
Who?
Garland Nixon, I think his name is.
Okay.
The Kucinich is kind of depressing because, like, for the Iraq War, he was, like, in Congress and he was, like, a strong voice against the invasion.
Chris Hedges was there too, right?
Yes, he was.
Yeah, and then
Cynthia Nixon was there as well.
Who?
Cynthia Nixon, former congressperson, who also has said some interesting things about...
Oh, wait. I thought you said Cynthia Nixon as in the actress from Sex and the City.
I think I might be mispronouncing her name.
I was like, no way.
Cynthia McKinney.
Cynthia McKinney, am I talking? The former congressperson.
Yes, yeah, okay.
Sorry,
yeah.
I got them mixed up. I got Garland Nixon mixed up. But didn't they say some interesting things about who was behind 9/11, really? Am I correct wasting times about it being an Israeli plot?
Yeah, she has some yikesy associations with authors that are anti-Semitic, and I think she has also made some yikesy comments.
You know who else was there a lot? A lot of LaRoucheites. Saw a lot of them.
Oh, I didn't. His wife spoke or had a video where she spoke or something, didn't she?
What's her? What's the wife's name?
Diane Sayre is the LaRoucheite that she ran for Senate in New York.
Oh, she quote tweeted me after because I posted a video of a Russian who was counter protesting there, who was like very anti-Putin and like, I don't want my people to die. They did like a nice, lovely statement. It got a lot of attention. And she quote tweeted, it was like, how much did you pay this person? Right. It was very bizarre, but I'm looking forward to her losing again in 2024. She got 25,000 votes in her last election. Her opponent got 3.5 million. So I'm looking forward to watching that happen again.
So I'm looking, at the lineup right now. Jill Stein, Max Blumenthal, and from of COVID conspiracy theory fame. of course, his outlet, the Gray Zone. Tara Reid,
can I tell you what she did during that speech?
What did
she
do?
She pointed to the Russian flags and said, I love the Russian flags. She pointed them all, and then she started talking about how Joe Biden sexually assaulted her. Don't know how that has to deal with Ukraine. I just kind of came out of left field. She just shouted out the Russian flags and then started talking about Joe Biden sexually assaulting her. It's a very, very strange interaction from Tara Reid. I don't even know why she was there. Like, what is she like?
She works for Kim Iverson now.
Kim Iverson, another really like, I really don't like Kim Iverson.
Kim Ivermectin.
Are you familiar with her Lebanon conspiracy theory?
I'm not. No, I just know. Again, I just know. So a lot of these people on this list, I just know them from their big coming out as anti-vaxxers over the past couple of years.
Kim Iverson accused the CIA and the Mossad of orchestrating the Lebanon port explosion with zero evidence. And she said they did it to get at China, to stop China from making trade deals with Lebanon. She did it with zero proof. And it's really kind of disgusting when you think about it, the amount of people that died, the amount of damage that was done that she and then made just used to make like a cheap political point. And then she went on to try to, in the same video, kind of like die down exactly what was happening to the Uyghurs in China. Saying, oh, it's just all anti-terrorism stuff. Don't worry. Right. It was a very, very strange person. The whole lineup was extremely strange. Roger Waters of Pink Floyd called in. Well, didn't
Roger
call
Waters.
In,
it, Roger,
Roger
Waters.
Waters. Sorry. Yep. He sent in a video message.
And earlier in the week, he was did a video call to the UN at the behest of the Russian delegation.
I also see that my buddy Pasta from Combo Couch, Craig Jardula, was there. I call him my buddy because I did a debate with the Convo Couch duo a couple of years ago, and it was a good time.
Pasta had a couple of very like pro-war. One was a tweet. Yeah, he was saying, "Oh, this other person, they're like talking about how Putin is like did the right thing, and I agree with him." So it was very clear that he was saying, "I think that he should have gone to war." And then he was, the eve of the event, of the rally, he was doing a stream like in the hotel with a bunch of these other weirdos and hangers on. And he said, for the coming presidential election, I think I'd back Trump because, he's like anti-Ukraine. He said anti-Ukraine.
I just don't like. Also, I want to point out that I saw this online. The company that is the official sponsor who printed up like their merch sells like pro US military gear.
Blue Lives Matter.
Veteran shirts and back, we support our police, things like that. A lot of gear with guns on it and stuff like that. But what I wanted to sort of bring up now, and we're going to obviously talk a little bit more about the event itself, but I want to talk more broadly now is I just don't understand the people who spoke at this rally and the people who went to this rally knowing, like, because they went to specifically support those speakers, knowing what the language and the gist of those speeches were going to be. It doesn't connect to me. When, like, how can you possibly think this is some sort of anti-war or anti-imperialist movement. If you openly support the country involved in invading the other, in this case, Russia, it makes zero sense to me. I will just never understand their bizarre reasoning. You can't even explain it. Because, listen, even if you're one of these people, and I'm not saying I agree with you, but I understand if you're one of these types, and I get where you're coming from. If you're just someone who wants the U.S. to stop, you know, funding Ukraine and just stay out of it, and they don't support Russia and they don't support Ukraine, they just want to back out of it completely, I don't agree, but I get that sort of viewpoint. Like, that's someone you could have a conversation with and come to some, you know, common ground in areas, I'm sure. But I don't get the openly pro-Russia view of these speakers when claiming they are an anti-war, anti-imperialist movement. If you want the war to end, who are you asking? It doesn't make any sense. There's one country who is inside the other country. If that country, in this case again, Russia, leaves, the war is over. But they're not asking Russia to do that. They're just openly supporting the country that has invaded the other. There's no language, there's no way of, you know, trying to explain this that will make that make sense. And I'm sure, Ogle, as you went through the clips, and Dylan, while you were there, I would at the very least hope you heard some trying to explain that, which might be a little bit better than them just pretending that's not an issue. Did anyone try to even approach that conundrum?
So I did try to talk to people about this, and every time they would avoid the question, or they would say, well, we have to have as big a tent as possible to stop the world from exploding. So it's, we have to invite these people who are pro-invasion to our anti-war event, or the world might end. It's like, and I mean, I'm making it sound more, I'm simplifying it and making it a little bit hyperbolic, but that's the idea, that they must pull every resource possible in order to end the war. But personally, if somebody was the ambassador to end the war, and I looked into, oh, they're a pedophile, or oh, they're somebody who's in favor of the invasion, if anything, I think that just compromises the movement. Like I said, the people who are not bust in with these different groups and were just like locals, or this was done next to the Lincoln Memorial, and people from the Lincoln Memorial were just like, what's this? They would come over, see it. They all reacted pretty negatively to it. I saw locals biking by just yelling, fuck you. Just like, just not happy with these people in DC. A lot of people forget DC is a large city that of people who live there. My mother was a resident in DC. And to me, I think that was communicated pretty clearly that this is a message that I don't think will succeed. I honestly walked away from the event. And as like politically, when I think about my values of supporting Ukraine, I'm not worried after that event, right? Polling data might make me worried. Other things might make me worried about the American public perception of the war. That event gave me zero concerns about their ability to organize a picnic, let alone an actual anti-war movement.
Right, right. Now was there, I don't know if we do know this, maybe Ogle, you came across this, but was there any attempt to get any Ukrainian or, you know, pro-Ukrainian voices at this event? Like, let's just say they were trying to go for this thing that maybe, oh, we'll bring, you know, some Russian, pro-Russia speakers, pro-Ukrainian speakers to, and you know, a meeting of the minds, and, you know, we want to have this view of, oh, look, we have these both sides together, kumbaya. They clearly did not do that. It didn't even seem like there was an attempt. But do we know if they reached out to anyone to actually get this other viewpoint?
Well, pretty much everyone down the line, I think they would say everyone in Ukraine is a Nazi. So why would you invite a Nazi to your rally, right? But then there are some Nazis that are actually against providing aid to Ukraine, like Nick Fuentes. Why didn't they invite Nick Fuentes? He has followers. So they invite the pedophiles. They invite all these fringe people. Like, you know, like, what's the limit of who you invite? And, like, this whole notion of, like, oh, it's a big tent, and so we have to get all the fringe people, and then we'll get all their fringe followers together. But it's like you're alienating all the normies. Like, these movements, like, you need to get normies on board. I mean, I'm glad that they're so bad at organizing.
Right. And I should say, it should be obvious at this point, but I always like to reiterate that when I am bringing this, you know, when I'm bringing up pro-Russia, what I mean is the pro-Russian regime of Putin's invasion in Ukraine. I'm not talking about the Russian people who have spoken out against this war within their country. And Dylan, I saw a video. You spoke with someone who claimed that they are a Russian citizen or was born and raised.
And I can confirm that because other reporter friends of mine have told me that they're actually their personal friend and they know them. I had reporters being like, oh, I know that guy. I know him from D.C., actually.
He's been
against the war since 2014. He told me that, like, look, before he didn't care about Ukraine because he's Russian. It wasn't his job to care about Ukraine. It was his job to care about Russia. And then he had to, once his country, in his words, started committing crimes against Ukraine in 2014. And ever since then, he's been very supportive of Ukraine. And ever since the February 24th expansion of the Russian imperial invasion and the occupation, he has been flying that Ukrainian flag on the back of his bike that he kind of goes around, because anybody who travels through the United States has noticed a massive uptick in Ukrainian flags being flown on houses and bumper stickers and stuff like that. And he just wanted to show that solidarity as a Russian person, as somebody from Russia. And the reaction that video got from one of the people who were there, the LaRouche candidate, who's going to get curb stomped in this election. I mean, maybe it's just like a loser sympathized with another loser in Vladimir Putin. They just denied it was real, said I paid them, that they were paid, because the idea of a Russian person possibly being against the invasion or possibly being supportive of Ukraine is impossible. It's impossible to the idea of that even happening, I guess.
I mean, that's a bizarre viewpoint when it seems like, at least when it comes to within Russia itself, that a good portion of people who actually have, put their lives or their families' lives on the line to speak out against this war. And we've seen plenty of proof in videos and posts online that have leaked out of demonstrations there, that people in Russia have spoken out against this.
There are most certainly Russians in Russia who are against the war. There's even people who have burnt down recruitment centers with Molotov cocktails and stuff like that. But I do need to emphasize, and I think Popular Front did a good documentary actually talking to, I think it was Bella, like Belarusian activists doing similar stuff in Belarus, or was in Russia, I forget exactly. But I do need to emphasize that this is a minority position, especially within Russia, and that the majority of Russians are either apathetic or in support of the war to some degree. But that doesn't mean that these people don't exist. The same thing was true of the Iraq war, when we were getting ready to invade Iraq or stuff like that. But obviously that opposition can grow with time as conditions worsen and the results and victories that were being promised are not delivered, especially as this war looks like it has a better chance of dragging out now. The Russians are preparing for that. But it really sucks to just see people completely just deny this person's existence or what they're saying rather than listening to what they have to say. When I was at the event, I interacted with a lot of people. The main concern I heard from people for, like, why they were there was nuclear war, the idea that World War III was going to happen. I couldn't really get many straight answers.
I honestly feel like, and I have to interrupt, so definitely remember what the rest of you were going to say, but I want to talk about that for a second while you brought it up, about that World War III aspect, because it feels like such, honestly, a crock of shit. Because, I mean, It seems like the most obvious thing to make it feel like, oh, let me think of something that makes it sound like a real genuine concern here. And so they bring up World War III every freaking time they talk about it. Listen, I'm not saying there's no concern to be had over the fact that Russia is a country that, you know, has nukes. But we've seen this game play out now for quite a while, specifically in terms of Ukraine for the past year now. And we're no closer to World War III than we were a year or more ago, honestly, and from what I've seen.
I have no reason to believe we're any closer. Some people, like, I have conversations with this, and it's and like some people are pointing to, like, well, the Russians just suspended the New START treaty. Well, the part that they suspended was the on-site inspections of nuclear sites, and the Russians haven't been allowing American inspectors into Russia for the last 3 years anyway. So that doesn't change anything. It's just, most of it is chest beating, and there's a lot of doctrine actually already written about the idea and commentary from Russian like military experts who talked about basically bluffing the West into submission using their nuclear arsenal, since it's one of their most powerful negotiating chips. The fact that, hey, we have this thing that could literally end the world. The problem is Russia, and this is a big problem for Russia, and I think if they could change this, they would. Russia's on planet Earth, and so if they blow up planet Earth, Russia goes with planet Earth, and so that's a problem that's kind of unavoidable.
Right. A big problem is that if I blow up everybody else, we're also blowing us up as well. I mean, it seems like major something problem that would play into that. Yeah.
It's why most modern militaries don't employ suicide bombers.
Right. Maybe on the International Space Station, there is a secret compartment that opens up into a whole new area that we didn't know about that can fit the entirety of Russia.
The entirety of Russia. Yeah, true. I never gave it much credence. I've talked at length about why the odds are low. I've talked to multiple people who know a lot more about this than me, and they have no reason to believe that the risk is any more than it was on day one of the war. And every escalation that people said that might lead to that, like it was, well, if we give them tanks, it's going to lead to that. It's going to be a major escalation. We give them tanks, nothing happens. Well, if we give them this, it's going to be a major escalation. It's going to change. We give them whatever it is that they've been asking for, and it's not a major escalation. Like, every single time we go further and further and further and further with aid, this idea that this piece of aid was going to be the next thing that, like, crosses the red line, just every single time it falls through. Some people talked about, like, hey, now that the Russians have declared all of this as Russian territory, now this is their territorial land, and it's if we take it, or if the Ukrainians take it back, then they're violating Russian territorial integrity, and they're going to use a nuke because Russian nuclear doctrine is based upon protecting Russia's territorial integrity. Ukraine takes back Kherson, nothing happens. The time that I would be concerned is when the Russians say, if this happens, we will use a nuke, because that's a commitment. All of it so far has been, we reserve the right to use our nuclear arsenal in defense of the Russian. It's like, well, of course, that's no different than Russian nuclear doctrine for the last 30, 40, 50 years. So I have no reason to believe that the situation has changed, that we are at an extremely heightened risk, more than like the Cuban Missile Crisis or other instances between like states fighting a war, kind of like, I don't like the word proxy war, but through proxy, like the Afghan war, for example, the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan, that didn't cause this. When they were providing weapons to the Viet Cong, that didn't cause that either. So I have no reason to believe that this is going to go any differently than those conflicts when it comes to the idea of these weapons of mass destruction being used. Also, could you imagine how fucking ridiculous it would have been when we were getting our ass whooped by the Viet Cong if we were just like, you know what, if the Viet Cong don't surrender, we're just going to flip the table and we're just going to nuke all of Vietnam. We're going to nuke them. The whole world would have laughed in our face after calling us psychotic. Not encouraged the behavior and rewarded it with, okay, you can have Vietnam. You can have Vietnam. You can basically like make a terror threat against the country and we'll just have to secede to you because what else can we do? And plus, you listen to Ukrainians, what do they say? Don't cave to these threats. Don't cave to these threats. There was a poll done recently that showed the vast majority of Ukrainians, even if the Russians were to use a nuke, they would still not want to surrender. And like that's insane commitment to the war effort, but also shows how much they're willing to go through in order to win. And so I think telling those people, hey, I know you're like, you know, you're doing really well relative to what we thought you were going to do, and you're taking back this territory, and there's a chance you might win the war, but don't win the war, because if you do and you control the territory you controlled 9 years ago, the world will explode. Like most, like Ukrainians have a right to laugh in your face when you say that to them.
Right. It's just, you know, it's I feel like this past year we've lived in some weird, I don't know, vortex where up is down, left is right, imperialism is anti-imperialist. It's so fucking bizarre. Now, Ogle, and this is for Dylan too, because he was there, so he heard these speeches. There was something I noticed at this event that, you know, it shouldn't be surprising that they... more than one person who spoke at this event had this viewpoint, but it was still interesting that multiple people, it seemed, thought it important enough to fit this line or a line touching on the subject into this speech at an event that's ostensibly supposed to focus on anti-war and anti-imperialism, and that is the bizarre obsession with trans people at this fucking event.
Yeah.
A Gray Zone journalist who's not Max Blumenthal said something I saw in her speech. Jimmy Dore threw a fucking line in his speech about it. The obsession with knocking trans people for, I don't even understand what reason it would be said at this event.
If I remember, because I saw that person who made the comment about trans people, the other person, the journalist you're talking about, they reposted that portion on Twitter. They're really proud of it, so they reposted it. It seems to be their point was, we can talk about the trans people after we've saved the world. That seems to be their point. Is that... If the idea was anytime two nuclear armed powers have a conflict with each other, whatever that conflict may be, we have to put everything on hold until we concede to everything on the other side of that conflict to save the world. I mean, that's silly. And I don't know why they kept bringing it up. But this whole speech, all the speeches were all over the place because it was 4.5 to 5 hours. 5 fucking hours was this event. 19 speakers. Musical, the guest, call in by Roger Walters. Why is it Roger Waters? Is Roger Waters?
Roger Waters. Yes, people were asking before in the chat. Yes, of Pink Floyd fame, that Roger Waters. Yes.
That one. Yeah, I know it's strange. It was too fucking long. I heard people ranting about central banking and the fiat currency in the middle of the. Why are we talking about central banking? Why are we talking about a fiat currency? Could you imagine like a Ukrainian like, oh, I heard there's a protest about Ukraine this weekend, goes out there and hears somebody ranting about Bitcoin in the middle. It's like, what is this about? Like,
well, it was a libertarian event.
That is true. It was a lot of libertarians. I shouldn't be that surprised, right? But like, I just like, it was kind of all over the place. But that was their plan, was to get as many speakers as possible, because considering how fringe most of the speakers were, they had to get a lot of people in order to get a lot of people there. They had to bust them in order to get them there. I checked. They did bust a lot of people in. So I think that they really failed at appealing to moderates, and I don't see any path for them to appeal to the people who would or are not what I would call schizophrenic.
I would speculate that, you know, this, they didn't really think that they were going to stop the war or do anything like that. Like, this is like a networking event for them. This is an opportunity for them to reach other audiences. So for like these Gray Zone people who are ostensibly on the left to start doing all this transphobic stuff, like they already have their whole quote unquote anti-imperialism, you know, audience. Like, they're all, you know, very, you know, dedicated to the Gray Zone. So they're like, hey, you know, we can experiment with, you know, A/B test this, you know, let's talk about some anti-trans stuff and see if we get, you know, get some more clicks when we pull that handle.
Right. I want to really drive home that this wasn't even just, I know Dylan mentioned that the Gray Zone journalist, I should say her name because I think it's important to be accurate here. Let me pull up that list of people who spoke again. She works for Max Blumenthal's Gray Zone, and her name is Anya Parampil. She didn't just say, like, we have to deal with this first and then we could talk about trans people. She, because that makes it seem more neutral, right? Like, still she's getting a dig in at trans people, but the language is still sort of neutral. She didn't just say that, though. She said something to the effect of, we need to deal with this first before we can deal with, biological men going into women's bathrooms.
Did she actually? Because I'm going to be honest, I had a massive hangover from the night before. I hadn't gotten any sleep. And so I think that's part of the reason I didn't get into many, like, arguments with people. And I was not listening to most of the speeches. And the reason why was, like, it was all, like, I'd hear the same talking point again. I've heard this a million times. And then I was more interested in talking to the people of the event, because the people there, man, I love the people watching an event like that. It is incredible, man. Is incredible to people watching an event like that.
Right. It's, let's get into that more in just 1 second about the people who showed up, because we have a little bit more to talk about there. But Ogle, as someone who went through all the speakers there, is there anyone that I'm downplaying who spoke there who we should know more about?
Yeah, I'll run through quickly. Well, Anya Parampril, who we were just talking about, she's married to Max Blumenthal, I believe, and she used to work for RT. So she has connections to Russia media, propaganda, state media. Jordan Page did the musical number. He was playing guitar and singing. He's an Oath Keeper. His Twitter profile picture, he has an Oath Keeper hat on. Wyatt Reed, he is a current employee of Russia state media. He works for Sputnik. I thought he probably had the most despicable presence at that event. Because he does work for the invading side, and he brought up, he said, and I was in Donbass, you know, he was in Donbass at the behest of Russia. And he's like, and, you know, people in Donbass, they've been through hell, you know, the Ukrainians have killed 15,000 people in Donbass. And that 15, that like before the war, before the invasion from 2014 until 2022, and that 15,000 number, like, he's like, oh, Ukrainians killed 15,000 people in Donbass. Civilians then? No, it's not civilians. The vast majority of those were combatants that were both Ukrainian combatants and separatist combatants, and also Russian soldiers that came over the border to prop up the separatists. Of the 15,000 that he mentioned, only about 3,000 but 3,000 were civilians. And the vast, vast majority of those civilians were killed in the first 2 years after Russia stole Crimea and invaded Donbass. Wow. The following years, the number of civilian casualties were only double digits. I think in 2021, it was 26. I was talking to a Ukrainian from Donbass on Twitter and DMs, and they were telling me that virtually all of those deaths are from like landmines and cluster munitions that were left over. So Wyatt Reed said up there saying 15,000, you know, killed, and he's not going into breaking down these numbers at all, which I think is super important. But they use this, they say that this 15,000, this justifies the invasion. This is one of their main justifications for the invasion, because they say it was a genocide and it's ethnic cleansing, and it's just, you know, once you dig down to the numbers, that is just total bullshit.
You know what gets me about the claim as a genocide is I went to the Donbass. I went to Kramatorsk in order to deliver aid and to do some interviews and stuff like that. And the soldiers I met there all spoke Russian. And those were the people that were supposed to be getting liberated by the Russians, but they're picking up guns to fight them. Could you imagine in any other genocide where the people being genocided pick up guns to fight the people supposedly coming to save them from genocide? Could you imagine, like, American soldiers enter Auschwitz and, like, the Jews pick up guns and they're like, we gotta fight back the American, like, in any other context, it's a completely ridiculous image in your head. But for some reason, the Russians think that that's happening here. It doesn't make any sense. Not to mention, Russia is probably the main killer of Russian-speaking people in the 21st century through this war.
Right. Yeah. So let's now talk about now, Dylan, you had mentioned earlier as you were there at the time. Wait, Ogle, did you have you actually, that was sort of a, you went off on a tangent there.
Yeah.
We were talking about the speakers. Let's stick with that, and then we'll finish up with Dylan on what he saw there on the ground while he was watching from the audience. Ogle, who else? We didn't really talk about Jackson Hinkle much, did we?
Yeah, Jackson Hinkle. I mean, he is the most shameless Russia shell in America, I guess. Maybe in Russia, too. He fucking loves Russia and Putin, and he's constantly posting to Twitter about how he wants Putin to win and Russia to win, and, you know, Ukraine is just full of Nazis, and, you know, this is, Russia's the greatest thing, and like, he's arguing that being pro-Russia is being pro-peace and anti-war, which is just totally absurd. And he debated about it. And I think he just does this thing where he just takes this absurd position and he's like, I think I'm smart. I think I can work backwards from this conclusion and just kind of like, you know, I can debate anything. And then, you know, maybe he convinces himself, or I don't even know if he has that much reflection about it, but, yeah, his speech, he was like talking about how like Joe Biden is just covered in blood and they're drinking blood soup.
Blood soup. Yeah, the blood soup speech. He talked about like blood soup.
Blood kind soup.
Blood little blood libel sounding. I don't know if he was.
What is this?
Nah, not that. I mean, I even said it though. Like, why? He's talking about. I even tweeted when I was kind of live tweeting the event a little bit. I said, Jackson's talking about blood soup now. Like, I was just a little confused. His whole speech seemed, in my view, to be summarized as Ukraine is Nazi state. Oh, the poor Ukrainian soldier. I sympathize with them so much. They're dying in Bakhmut, right? But all of those soldiers would despise Jackson and everything he stands for. And then, like, he wrapped up with the blood soup. It was, I don't know, not the best speech. I got to be honest.
And one thing that I don't think we touched on.
He wrapped up with
that...
the blood soup.
We haven't talked about like what the Ukrainians want, right? Like overwhelmingly, like, well, we talked about
that's the thing. I didn't meet a single Ukrainian there. I can't say that.
Yeah.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Ukrainians polling overwhelmingly, they want to keep fighting. They'd rather live under war than under subjugation.
There is this bizarre sort of dynamic where these anti-imperialist Americans. These anti-imperialist American activists are so anti-imperialist that they decide that the people of Ukraine have no agency over themselves and they must just be doing the bidding of the United States. The true anti-imperialist mindset right there.
Yeah, I had that problem multiple times during that event where they're talking about the coup, like the CIA coup, Euromaidan, where if you speak to the Ukrainian people and how they talk about Euromaidan, they talk about it as an extremely proud moment in Ukrainian history where they stood up to a government that was caving to economic coercion and going back on its promises and then engaged in literally, I don't think a lot of people realize how brutal the response to the protesters were. They hired actual gangsters, like what would be the equivalent of like Joe Biden hiring MS-13 to go put down protests and to instigate violence and stab and beat people. They took nails and screwdrivers and bolts and tied them around flashbangs before throwing them into the crowd. People, like a lot of people, died. And it was because of that violence and Yanukovych moving to ban protesting. A lot of people forget that. That was like the tipping point for a lot of people. But somehow, everybody thinks that they could see that and not understand how that situation could lead to people possibly wanting Yanukovych out of his position of power in the country after he went back on his promises, caved to the Russians, and then unleashed that type of violence on his people before banning protesting because the people were just disagreeing with him too much, right? It can't be that their people reacted as most people would react to that scenario. If like Joe Biden tomorrow announced he was going to ban protesting against him, do you think Republicans would be like, oh, well, you know, I mean, you got to do what you got to do, right? No, you would probably see a very deservedly so angry and on the streets reaction to that.
That's right, Jack.
Jack, we're hiring MS-13 to put you MAGA crown down. Like they would be going crazy.
Right, that's
they'd be
right.
Having seizures.
And I think a lot of these people are hypocrites for, like, you know, calling Maidan a coup and not, you know, embracing it as a revolution. Like, a lot of these people are, like, some of them are communists or just a lot of them are so anti-establishment. Like, they're like, yeah, we need to grab our pitchforks and take down, you know, the American system. And meanwhile, Ukraine, they did that. You know, they were in an impossible situation. You know, Yanukovych broke the social contract. You know, they were going to live under Russian subjugation with Yanukovych if they didn't, you know, do what they did. And, you know, I mean, in terms of like, you know, like they'll often be like, well, they didn't technically impeach Yanukovych, you know, and it's like, well, that's because like, you know, a whole bunch of Yanukovych's members of the party that were required in order to get enough numbers to make the impeachment complete weren't even present for the vote. And like they ended up doing a vote in a different way to get him out. But it's like the outcome was that overwhelming majority of the people were happy with the outcome of that, and they were able to live, you know, with self-determination as a result of everything that happened.
Right. And one more thing I wanted to touch upon here, because I thought this was interesting. There was some sort of disagreement among the organization Code Pink, right, over this event. Its founder, Medea Benjamin, who's been a strong anti, like she's been actually been a strong anti-war voice over the years. It's been one of her main issues. She's constantly shown up at events, has interrupted, you know, the floor of the House and the Senate to interrupt these sort of hearings. And she has been a strong anti-war voice, which was why it was disappointing to see her wrapped up in this. But the organization she founded, Code Pink, came out and forced her to, like, put out a statement or say something because they didn't want any involvement in it. And they made it clear that it was just her and not representing Code Pink. Are either of you aware of this, what happened here?
I have some awareness. They objected to, I believe, Scott Ritter being there and also Jackson Hinkle because of Hinkle's odious misogyny, I think.
Right, but I think they even went so far as to say they wanted their branding, like their logos and everything taken off the event. Yeah, they wanted nothing to do with the event.
I actually like posted like Code Pink dropped out of the event on my big viral thread. And someone from Code Pink actually DM'd me and they're like, actually, we never sponsored this event. And the organizers kept putting our logo on stuff, but we never sponsored it. Medea herself signed up for it and we pressured her to drop out.
Right. I do think, again, there were some people who spoke at this event, Medea Benjamin being one of them, who I do think had good intentions. But this belief of this red-brown alliance siding with these right-wingers and these far-right fascists to come together to fight the big real powers, it's never going to be a thing because those people on the right hate you. They hate you Look, more than those big powers you think they're teaming up with you to go after.
The coming coalition of pedophiles, Nazbols, Nazis, and Russia supporters is a powerful movement. That's the future of the People's Party, I'm sure. I think from my presence at the event, from my interaction with people, the majority of the people that I interacted with, they were not disgusting, horrible, like just scumbags, like fuck you. There were a few people who would just like just walk up to me like fuck you, CIA dog, and then they would like run away before I could ask them a single question. It's like people just were very like a few like acidic people. Majority of people were very nice to me. The LaRouche people were like they were very debate bro-y the whole time, but they were very nice to me.
Oh, they love attention. That's the whole thing. Their whole thing. They need you to interact. I remember back in the mid to late 2000s, just not being at, like literally just walking down the street in Manhattan, and you would see the LaRouche booth with that big picture of Obama with the Hitler mustache. They were just always out to just get attention, and they loved if you stopped at their booth, they would talk to you about anything and everything to try to convince you to just give them your email address.
They did everything. Dude, they really wanted my email address too. They really wanted it. But the thing that gets me is that I did meet people there that were like old hippie types that I think are very well-meaning, right? They might talk about Three Mile Island anytime you talk about the power of like you know radiation to like you know battle climate change and stuff like that. But they're well-intentioned people. But I remember I was talking to one of those old hippie types, and they can be very verbose. And during that conversation, I heard from them that the election in Ukraine, that means like the election to like be annexed, the fake referendum that the Russians held, the rubber stamp, was more fair than the 2020 election. And when I heard that, it was like in my mind, it's just like this person does not work off the same basic information, basic facts as I do. This person has, in my mind, such a warped perception of reality that it's no wonder that they've come to this crazy conclusion is because if you cherry pick information or have like or working off of faulty information, you can build yourself up to some pretty crazy takes. And this was just one of them. And they had been built up on faulty information. And we see it like how Jimmy Dore cherry picks exactly what he will and won't talk about when it comes to Ukraine. When he describes the Euromaidan revolution, he describes it as the United States gave neo-Nazis something, they supported neo-Nazis in overthrowing the government in order to control Ukraine's economy. Even though the whole Euromaidan movement started with Russia economically coercing Ukraine, which it promised not to do in the Budapest Memorandum, by stopping trade on the border. But by leaving that information out and twisting the facts and what is there, he can present a perverted version of history that never happened, right? And if you listen to this person and you trust this person, because he's anti-establishment, and the establishment in America has done you wrong so many times, and this guy isn't that, so he must be right, right? I understand the inclination, but people don't need to listen to these populist con artists, and they definitely do not need to say, I don't trust the American foreign policy establishment, so instead, I'm going to trust the Russian foreign policy establishment.
Right. How did the event, what was your takeaway when this event ended? Do you think that they felt it came up like, oh, here's the perfect way to bring this up. So I saw a video being spread around on Twitter, like a day or two after the event, really pissed off about the discourse online about the attendance to this Rage Against the War Machine rally. And before we get into it, just this one question for you, Dylan. What would you peg the attendance at? Was this a big event? How many people do you think, would you say, estimate, you know, showed up?
Well, I've been to a lot of DC protests. I went to the Millennium MAGA March. I was at January 6th. I went there in a Biden hoodie. And I've been to this protest. It was probably, it was smaller than those. I would say that the amount of people was probably between 1,000 to 2,000. Now, if we're talking about on the upper end of that spectrum, we're including people who went to the Lincoln Memorial, like random tourists, and like wandered over for like 5 seconds and then walked away. We're including counter protesters, which there were counter protesters. We're including the casual observers who were there to people watch like me. I got a lot of people walked up to me, shook my hand, and was like, this is crazy. These people are nutters, right? And a lot of people walking up to me, shaking my hand, saying that. So like those people, I'm including them. I'm including like the health detail and like all the just like staff and stuff. I'm including the vendors who came by to like, you know, shill their Gatorades, like the DC Hustle people. I'm including everybody. And then we're on that like maybe closer to 2,000, but like we're in the 1 to 2K range. I don't know if they wanted more or less, but it's like okay turnout, but it wasn't like the historic event that they were advertising it in their material and they had pumped themselves up on. But I mean, it's not that crazy. I wouldn't drive like 10 hours to go listen to a pedophile. I wouldn't do that, and I'm surprised not many other people would either. I'm not that surprised. But I think for like who they are, maybe they did okay. They don't have a single actual elected congressman. They're all former congressmen, because nobody would like that would want to be associated with the event. The thing that gets me though is a night or two nights before, they got shouted out on the most popular cable news show in America, Tucker Carlson Tonight, and they should have been able to turn out more people considering that fact, in my opinion.
That's a great point. So I asked you that though because I saw there was people who were upset over the reports that it wasn't super well attended, and I did see about, you know, the estimates from other people who were there around 1,000, which you know, for an event, impressive to get 1,000 people out, or 1,000 or so people out.
Yeah, but 19 also speakers and the Pink Floyd guy calling in, right? Pink Floyd,
Also, this is an event on this huge venue that area in DC really showcases if you don't have a good turnout because of just how open the open space and how large it is. So it doesn't, 1,000 people may sound impressive, but doesn't look impressive in that location. And so there are people who are upset over that. And then someone shared a video of this like overhead view of this super large crowd. And it was first of all, it was a shot of close-ups from the event of people waving the Russian flag. And then it cuts to a shot overhead taken from like an angle close to the Washington Monument, looking down on this huge, giant group of people, and it looked like maybe like 5,000 or more people. And they were saying this video proves that it was well attended, and that these people online were just naysayers. Well, it turns out I don't know where this edit originated from. But this clip that was being shared by these people who were pro this event actually were sharing a video that interspersed an overhead clip from a drone on January 6th, 2021. And so that was the audience that they were saying, oh, that's us. Look how great that is. Which is really so on the nose based on the people who spoke at this event and the overwhelming, narrative being spread also at this event. I mean, just really says it all, doesn't it? I mean, that they would, someone would think to do that and then they would also be fine with that.
I did a debunk of that. I didn't know it was January 6th, but like you could see in the background of like the overhead shot when it pans up, you can see in the background the White House, you can see in the background the Organization of American States building, and then the crowd relative to that, and the Lincoln Memorial is way off to the side of that. So, and then there was another Cope tweet that was really funny. It was Nick Brana tweeted, Biden made a surprise visit to Ukraine the day after we organized the biggest anti-war rally since the Iraq war. Let that sink in. We got to them this weekend and we're just getting started. Hashtag rage against
the war. I love the idea of like Biden in the White House sweating like, oh God, Jackson Hinkle's coming. he's terrified. Like, oh God, Rand Paul. Like he has to like, okay, what are we going to do? We don't want them to concentrate on it. He had planned that trip probably for a while. And they had to because the Secret Service told Biden not to go. They didn't want him to go, but he made the decision, I'm going anyway. And there's no way that they didn't like organize all the phone jamming and the which they did, and the quartering off like certain roads and like keeping them from the public way in advance. I mean, this is just complete cope. The idea that Joe Biden would organize a travel to Ukraine based upon the whims of the People's Party.
It's delusional. They're all so fucking delusional.
I do have to say that I have some breaking news here. I heard from a very reliable source. One certain individual who works for the White House and loves trains, that Biden did arrange this whole trip after he saw Jackson Hinkle was coming down to D.C.
Wow. You know what? It would have been great if maybe, you know, Biden, when he was traveling to Ukraine, he brought Jonah Hill to really, like, really counter Jackson as powerfully as possible.
Ooh. Yeah.
Some lore.
Yeah. For people who don't know.
Oh, no. Do we need to explain the lore?
I don't know. It's pretty funny, though. All right. We won't explain it.
You can explain it.
Can look it up. People just look up Google search Jackson Hinkle, Jonah Hill.
You're great friends in high school. That's the story.
And then go ahead and reply to any Jackson Hinkle threads with like a gif of Jonah Hill.
Right. All right, guys, this was great. Was there anything else you guys wanted to mention that from the event that we didn't touch upon?
There is one last thing I want to mention.
Oh, no, please go ahead.
I talked to the counter protesters, and there should be actually other DC events happening this weekend that are actually pro-Ukraine and pro-sending support to Ukraine. So if anybody's in the D.C. area or possibly wanted to look into that, you should. And there's also other pro-Ukraine events happening all over the world, like all the time. And you should just look if any are going on near you, or if there aren't, you can organize them yourself. Because for as much as attention they want to give to this rally, all across the world, there are a lot of pro-Ukraine rallies that have happened that have gotten crazy, crazy attendance. I mean, if you looked at that Biden speech he gave in Poland, that was pretty well attended as well. And when I talked to the people who were counter-protesters there, a lot of them were people who did aid work in Ukraine or had been to Ukraine and seen the devastation firsthand. I did not experience that same first person kind of like interaction with the other side when I was talking to. I met one person who's been to Moscow. You know, but I didn't really meet anybody who had been to Ukraine at the event outside of the counter protesters, which I think that shows that for the people who are supporting Ukraine, a lot of this is a more personal struggle than a lot of the kind of reactionary response to all of this aid to Ukraine.
Right. Yes, that's a great point. So Ogle, a.k.a. The Wasting Times, Dylan Burns, thank you so much for joining me tonight. Please, Ogle, why don't you go first? Feel free to drop wherever people can find you online, any work you're doing you want to share. Floor is yours. Please go ahead.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at The Wasting Times. And then I'm also doing some sporadic Twitch streaming here and there. Also, The Wasting Times on Twitch.
Perfect. And Dylan, same for you. Please let everyone know where they can find you.
You can find me in Langley, Virginia, at my office and headquarters. But no, you can find me at Dylan Burns TV on Twitch, DYLANBRNS TV. I have a website which you can watch my streams and see a lot of my content through, DylanBurns.TV. You can type that in. And I also have a main and second channel, Dylan Burns TV, where I do my journalistic content. I have a new piece that I'm working on that I'm really excited about. I have a piece on Elon and Starlink that's on there now that people can go check out. I've got a lot of pieces I'm working on, one about the rally I just went to, and also one about a really cool program where people signed shells that they signed, people donated messages to sign on shells and then fire them at the Russian army. And they were literally writing memes on the Russian on shells that would end up killing people. It is an incredibly insane story, and they've raised millions of dollars doing this. And I went and I interviewed the people behind the project, and I'm working on it right now. The script is done. I'm just finishing the audio recordings. So look out for that on my main channel. And lastly, I have a second channel. Sorry, I'm showing so much. Dylan Burns Live. We can see my daily uploads and my live stream content.
There you go. No, no shilling is too much on this show. Shill away, Dylan. Shill away. All right, guys. Thank you so much. Always a pleasure to talk with you all. And I look forward to having both of you on again in the near future.
Awesome. You have a good one.
Take Thanks care. So much. Take care. Bye. Bye.
All right, folks. That is not the end of our show here, because I'm going to be taking calls from all of you. I will read your super chats in the YouTube live chat. I will read any messages in Twitch that come with the Twitch Prime subscription or a regular tier subscription. And I will open up the Skype phone lines to all of you. And anyone could call in. Some people ask sometimes, do I have to be a paying subscriber? You do not have to be a paying subscriber to call into the show. I take the calls first come, first serve. As the numbers pop up on Skype, I grab the first one I see, and then I talk with that person. And then when that call ends, you got to try to call back again right away and be the first again. No waiting system set up. I would like to do that eventually, but don't have that set up quite yet. But to support this show, to help it to keep growing and help me have the funds to do more cool things, create more content, please consider becoming a paying monthly subscriber at patreon.com/MattBinder. Your support greatly helps grow this show. And I want to take a moment now to thank all the people who became patrons over this past week. Tom H., Manda, Gerald G., Fatty A., Dylan W., Matthew C., Mark, and J. Coco. Thank you all so much for becoming patrons at patreon.com/MattBinder. Once again, if you can afford or would like to sign up and become a paying monthly subscriber, it is the best way to help this show grow and help me continue to do more work. Of course, I always say if you can afford, because if you can't, please, I don't want to be one of those people who say, I don't like when people do that. If you can't, take care of yourself first, your family, do whatever you can. Because when people cancel the Patreon subscription, that's usually the reason in the exit survey they give me. They lost their job, financial difficulties. That is the perfect reason to not do it anymore. Don't feel bad about that. This is a call to people who can afford to do so and have that extra spending money. And this is what they'd like to do with it to support the content that I do. So thank you to my patrons, and, you can also drop a, super chat in the live chat if you want to give, the YouTube live chat at youtube.com/MattBinder if you'd like to give a one-off, payment, and I'll read your comment there. If you're a Amazon Prime subscriber, be sure to connect your Amazon Prime account to your Twitch account, and you get a free Twitch Prime subscription every month. If you're not using that free Twitch Prime subscription, you're just letting Amazon keep extra money that you give them for Amazon Prime. So force them to give a little bit to your favorite creator each month. I'm telling you, because I hope you give it to me at twitch.tv/MattBinder. But even if you don't give it to me, give it to someone on there so it just doesn't go to waste. Jeff Bezos got enough of your money. So please do that. You can also go to doomedcast.com for the podcast version of this show. You can check out my other show at scameconomy.com. You could follow me on Twitter at Matt Binder. And we are going to go to the second half of the show right now. I'm going to take your calls. I'm going to read your super chats and your Twitch paid comments. And just give me a quick second. I'm going to do a quick musical interlude with the wonderful break song that listener Renee has made for us. And after that quick interlude, literally less than a minute, I'll be back. I'm just going to go and refill my drink, and we'll be back on, and I'll be taking your calls at just open Skype and search Doomed Live. One word, Doomed Live, and I'll take your calls there. Just give me a quick second, and I'll be right back. If you are not sticking around on the live stream, and you are not a Patreon subscriber, if you, this is just for people who listen to the free podcast-only version of this show, this is where I say to you, goodbye, and I will see you all next time on Doomed.